says, "Okay, I'm sitting down now so the meeting can start."
Oh, is that how it
works? Very quiet, huh?
He was sitting when we got here, though. 20 minutes ago.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to our JPAC meeting for December 22nd, 2016. I call the meeting to order. And we do have a very packed agenda, so I'm even going to forego usually going around the room for introductions, but we will go around the table at least. So my name is Craig Dirksen. I'm a Metro Councilor for District 3 and the Chair of JPAC. Let's go this way.
Allison Keene, Metro Attorney.
And Neil McFarland with TriMet.
Philly Craddock, Metro Council.
Steve Novick, City of Portland.
Bill Wyatt, Port of Portland.
Brian Winsheim with ODOT.
Paul Savas, Clackamas County.
Tim Knapp, Wilsonville Mayor, representing cities of Clackamas County.
Danny Doyle, cities of Washington County.
Bob Stacey, Metro Council.
Chris Spencer, Metro South.
It actually does not look like we have a quorum at present, but maybe we will by the time we get to the minutes, which is actually the only action item today. And we have an opportunity now for public comment. And as I said, we have a really packed agenda, and I know we're going to have some folks who want to speak on items around the regional flexible funds. So I'm going to ask folks to really keep your comments as short as you can. And if you are representing a group, it would be great if you could pick a spokesperson who could then speak for you instead of each of you having to speak. I'd appreciate if you could be able to do that. And I do have seven cards of people who would like to speak, and the first of these is Mayor Russ Axelrod. Come on up, Mr. Right there would be fine.
Thank you, Chair Dirksen and Co-Chair Craddock. I'm Russ Axelrod, the Mayor of Westland. I want to thank you for this opportunity to talk about our Highway 43 project. As you know, Highway 43 is the primary north-south arterial through our city and the only north-south corridor west of the Willamette River other than I-5. It provides a critical transportation corridor route in and out of Portland and is the primary and only TriMet transit route serving our south metro region. Highway 43 is old, more than 100 years old, and has been a failed roadway of increased congestion, air pollution, and safety hazards to our citizens and regional commuters, now numbering some 35,000 or more a day. I witnessed the decline of Highway 43 over the last 25 years, and it's become especially dangerous for seniors, citizens, pedestrians, and bicyclists, in addition to automobiles and truck traffic. It's reached the point where many residents will no longer use TriMet because it's not possible to cross the roadway safely many times of the day. In fact, there remain today sections of ODOT's highway where we have no sidewalks at all and no handicap accessibility at traffic signals. The corridor serves all of Westland and the region, but it's also through a part of Westland that's teeming with senior citizens, new families, and small children seeking lower-cost housing and opportunities to shop locally and get to schools and park safely without always having to jump into their cars. Westland has worked for years now to develop this 43 project. It includes an innovative separated cycle track design to ensure comfortable and safe pedestrian, bicycle, and auto traffic. It includes state-of-the-art intersection design plans and improvements to support transit, and in short, incorporates the latest designs to facilitate true multimodal transportation. The project has received great support from our neighbors in Lake Oswego and Oregon City and from surrounding cities. The project was ranked number one by the Clackamas County CTAC and C4 committees, and it had unanimous support from regional leaders during the evaluation process. The project has been recommended for $1.2 million of STIP funding, and I'm proud to mention our first STIP grant ever, but these funds are at risk without the RFFA support from Metro. I want to emphasize that Westland has never received any RFFA funding over the past decade, while other projects and communities have received repeated awards. Westland is moving forward in a positive direction, and we ask Metro to support our community as a partner to help us take care of this vital corridor serving the broader metro region. The upgrade of 43 will also help stimulate our desired economic development along the corridor and for the region. It will construct just the first phase of our plan to improve Highway 43 along this corridor, which will become increasingly important to Oregon City as it develops the Willamette Falls property under the Legacy Project, which I'm sure you're familiar, and as West Lynn follows with our improvements to create a master plan now in progress for the broader riverfront area. It will also eventually support recent bike and vehicle improvements to the new Selwood Bridge. So on behalf of our citizens, I urge you to support this innovative project to build safe, multimodal transportation facilities for this vital regional corridor, and I thank you for your opportunity for us to speak. We have a couple citizens and another councillor, but if you want to keep it short, we'll do whatever you...
Well, and obviously, if people have something they want to say, we can allow them to say it. But if what you want to say is the same thing that you've heard, if you wanted to stand and just say what he said, well, that would be good as well. So
I have copies of my testimony, too. You can circulate those.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So next item to speak is Bob Martin from the Westland City Council.
I'm Bob. I was just encouraged to say what he said. But I would like to add one thing to that, which is that Highway 43 is so overloaded right now that it's affecting our ability to increase any density, which is one of the goals I know that Metro would like to see, because we have intersections that are rated F and we're not allowed to make them worse. So part of this project would improve the safety of those intersections and perhaps allow us to lift this sort of de facto moratorium that we have on development. And everything else, I couldn't say better than Russ.
All right. Well, thank you for coming. Also, Brenda Perry.
And I'm going to say I support both of them and pass.
All right. Thank you. Mark Gamba from the City of Milwaukee. Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, Chair Dirksen, members of JPAC.
Good morning.
In a sane world, this whole list of projects would not only be funded to be designed, and in the cases where they're just being asked for design money, they'd also be built. But we don't live in a sane world, and it's likely to become less sane over the next 4 years. Milwaukee, in essence, has two projects on this list. The Monroe Greenway is split in half because the outer half is unincorporated Clackamas County at this time. It will eventually be the city of Milwaukee. It's in our UGMA. They're both very worthy projects. They both serve low-income people. They are both first last mile projects, and regionally it will be the furthest south east west connection on that side of the river between the trolley trail and I-205. I would have preferred to see them be submitted as one project, but there was a difference in matching funds between what Clackamas has and what we had at the time. But what I'm here to do today is to throw Milwaukee under the bus. As important as the Monroe Greenway is to us, and as much as it's been my pet project since before I was even on council, as a regional leader and as a cyclist, I can tell you that the West Lynn project is going to fill a bigger hole in our system. That side of the river is a death trap for cyclists, and it shouldn't be. There's a lot of people that could be using 43 as a commute if there were safe facilities. So I'm strongly recommending that JPAC fund the West Lynn project and that we come back with Monroe at a later point as one project to both design and build simultaneously. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thank you. Robert Stowell. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. I'm a citizen. I have come before you today to urge you to give Westland the chance to improve Highway 43 and make it a much safer place for cars, bicyclists, and pedestrians. I have lived less than a block from 43 since moving to Westland in 1970. Over the years, I can't even remember the number of rear-enders that have happened at Arbor Drive in 43 because of the lack of a left turn lane. I can't even tell you how many cars are passing on the right in the bike lane when others are trying to turn off of 43 to go up or down Arbor Drive. And I firmly recall an incident that happened to my wife when she and another car were both turning up and down Arbor Drive at the same time when a car three cars back decided to pass on the right in the bike lane, plowed into the rear end of our car. No one was hurt, but our car was damaged. My health no longer allows me to bicycle and run. I now walk 3 to 4 days a week. At times, it's almost impossible to cross 43 at Arbor Drive. There are no marked crosswalks other than the signals. Sometimes I literally hold my hand out. In fact, I did that yesterday morning to get across 43 to get cars to stop. This even happens at clearly marked crosswalks at Glenmorey and Lake Oswego. It doesn't make any difference that a couple of years ago the law was passed requiring cars to stop where streets enter the highway, even if not marked. The only improvements made on 43 since 1970 is when a remodel or a new development requires half-street improvements and sidewalks. In closing, I'm hoping after all these years we can move forward to do the badly and needed improvements to 43 to make it safer for all users. Thank you.
Thank you. Ed Schwartz from the City of Westland.
Morning.
Good morning.
Chair Dirksen and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to provide this testimony. I think you have copies of my remarks in front of you. My name is Ed Schwartz. I live in West Lynn. I'm president of the Savannah Oaks Neighborhood Association, one of 11 neighborhood associations in West Lynn. I'm also chair of the Neighborhood Association President's Advisory Board in the city of West Lynn. So at our most recent monthly meeting, the 9 Neighborhood Association presidents in attendance unanimously voted their support for my testimony to you today regarding West Lynn's Highway 43 multimodal transportation safety project. The first phase of this project will improve pedestrian, biking, transit, and vehicular mobility along Highway 43 from Lake Oswego border to Mary S. Young Park. Most importantly, we feel it will improve safety along this route as well. So the reasons for our support include, first, this project includes uninterrupted bicycle paths and sidewalks, improved transit stops, improved lighting, and ADA accessibility. It will eventually provide a bicycle route from Oregon City through to the Selwood Bridge in Portland. Second, West Lynn has been working on plans for this corridor and trying to fund improvements for many years. The city has already been awarded $1.1 million in state enhanced funding for this project. Another $1.3 million will come from Westland's system development charges and street funding. So the $3.4 million from this RFFA grant will allow this multimodal transportation safety project to be successfully completed. Third, Highway 43 is a major traffic corridor to Portland from Westland and beyond. Improving it will help traffic and transit flow more smoothly, especially during morning and evening commute hours. Fourth, the two main roads through West Lynn are I-205 and Highway 43. Both of these roads divide our city. This project would help to bridge that divide and bring both sides of Highway 43 together once again. Fifth, West Lynn has never received RFFA grant funding before. Sixth, the area along Highway 43 in West Lynn has long been underutilized when it comes to commercial potential. Improving this road to help with traffic and pedestrian flow will also help to revitalize the commercial property along it. So for the reasons outlined above, we, the Neighborhood Association Presidents of West Lynn, request your support of the Multimodal Transportation Safety Project grant funding. Thank you.
Thank you. And John Bilzo. Did I get that right? Is that correct?
That's
Thank
right.
you.
I sort of threw things together last moment, and one of the things I had done previously was send an email out that has some photographs on it, so I'll pass this out to everybody. The email is not so important right now, but do please take a look at the photos. I'll pass them down that way. And thank you, Chair Dirksen and members of JPAC. I appreciate giving me the opportunity to speak. Again, my name is John Bilso. I'm a resident of East Hill, which is part of Gresham's Northwest neighborhood. And I'm also the land use chair of Gresham Neighborhood Northwest Neighborhood Association. I'm also land use chair for the Rockwood Neighborhood Association, and that had made me a good choice to be the vice president of the Coalition of Neighborhood Associations. I also sit on the Powell Division Transit Project Steering Committee, Metro's, and I know many of you here from that. Anyway, recently there was a consensus among the steering committee to recommend bus rapid transit from Portland to Gresham along Division Street. That's the route. And there's a price tag on this of about $175 million. But this route and this choice doesn't seem to have the funding dedicated yet, the full amount of funding, which is why I'm here to talk about the complete Division Street project, which is part of the JPAC, one of the JPAC recommended projects. I'm also ex-teacher, and I think I feel comfortable saying, can you please turn off your mobile devices? Okay. Now, if you have something more important to do, please do it. The point I'm trying to make here is when all of these projects first came to the table, Division Street, putting sidewalks on Division Street was not really thought of as being that important because there are so many projects that need funding, and they are very important as well. However, now we have a quite significant bus rapid transit project going down Division Street. And there are sections of Division Street that have absolutely no sidewalks. Some of those pictures show that. If you are smart and you've done it once or twice, you know that it's just crazy to walk along Division Street. If you build bus stops, high-tech sidewalks, high-tech bus stops, put in nice lighting around the bus stop, that's great. But you're setting up for failure because you're going to ask people to get off the bus, walk a few feet down that nice sidewalk, and then wind up in the dark, in the mud, along a five-lane highway. This is two lanes in either direction. Going where? This morning, you're having a meeting very early in the morning. I wondered, should I drive here or not? Because I might slide down Birdsdale into Division, just like the four or five cars that slid and were wiped out, T-boned, or drove up onto the embankment because there was some ice on the road. People don't realize that. I ask you to consider that when you reevaluate all of these projects and maybe bump the level of Division Street sidewalks up a little bit. Thank you very much. I'm going a little bit over time, but take a look at those pictures. See for yourself.
Thank you. All right, that's all the cards I have. And so is there anybody else that didn't get a chance to sign up? Okay, not seeing anybody, we'll move on to updates from the chair and committee members. First of all, I would like to point out that Councillor Stacey is with us today, and that is because neither Councillor Harrington nor Councillor Chase, who is the alternate, was able to be at this rescheduled meeting. And by the way, thank everybody for being able to adjust the schedule because of the snow that we had last week. Also, Councillor Stacey will be joining JPAC next year as a representative from the Metro Council, because Councillor Harrington is going to be serving as the deputy president next year. And so because today's meeting is talking about a vote that we're going to be making next month, it was appropriate for him to be here today. Would like to thank everybody who was able to come to the third of our regional leadership forums on December 2nd. We had great turnout, and I think we had a terrific amount of participation from elected officials, also from community and business leaders, and had some what I consider some very productive discussions and giving us input into where we should go with the RTP and for funding. Next month at our meeting on January 19th, Kim Ellis will be giving JPAC an update on what kind of came out of that, what we heard, and what we can use going forward in the process. And the next scheduled forum is a ways away, probably going to be in December of 2017. Our staff needs that time to take the input we've received so far and kind of churn it and turn it into something that we can use as we move forward. We also, last month, went on a good trip to Seattle. So thanks to all of you who are able to attend that. And we're actually going to be working to host a lunch and learn event. There was so much there that rather than try to just do a report out at one of these kinds of meetings, I want to have an opportunity for folks who went on that trip to be able to kind of express what they heard and saw there, as well as myself and others. So we're going to be scheduling a lunch and learn in January, and you'll be getting an invitation if you were both of you were a member of that trip or would like to come and hear what's going on. We'll be having that coming out to everybody. As you may know, there's going to be a shakeup perhaps in CMAQ funding, and ODOT created a committee to look at how we might restructure the division of that money. Neil McFarlane and I both attended that meeting. There was a representative from each of the eight MPOs in the state of Oregon and also different transit agencies across the state. It's pretty clear that ODOT is putting all the options on the table, and City of Eugene, or Greater Lane, is focused on getting a larger portion of what they see as their fair share of CMAQ money, and really activated all of their elected officials on this issue. The next CMAQ meeting will be in January. They're expecting four meetings at that point. The committee is expected to come up with a recommendation to ODOT and the commission, the Transportation Commission, at the end of those four meetings. And we might follow up after the next meeting with some specific asks for your engagement with that group, because outside voices from others in each of the regions is going to have a lot of impact. We are going to have a JPAC trip to D.C. this spring. The National Association of Counties and the League of Cities annual meetings are happening in late February and mid-March. They're not as close together, I think, as they usually are, so it would be difficult to coordinate our trip with those trips. So instead, we're thinking about overlapping our JPAC trip slightly with the annual Oregon Business Plans trip, which kicks off on April 5th. So we're anticipating that our JPAC trip, the two dates for meetings would be April 5th and April 6th. So put that on your calendar, and we'll be able to share more details on that shortly. Now, this is our final meeting of 2016. I want to acknowledge all that we've accomplished this year on the Regional Flexible Funds policy framework, as well as laying the foundation for the RTP and also for a legislative agenda coming up for our offering to the legislature for their session coming up next year. And I thank you for your attention and your engagement in these key issues. And there will be much more to come next year. So take a look at the work program in your packet for more details about when we'll be addressing all those different issues. That also means that there are some folks in the room for whom this is their last meeting. And I would like to acknowledge and thank them for their service and efforts to improve transportation in the Portland metro region. And I have some, if I can pick them up, some certificates for some folks who are here. And first of all, I'd like to thank Commissioner Steve Novick for all of his participation and thoughtful contributions to the JPAC. And so I have a certificate, and we can hand that to you when the time is appropriate. And unfortunately, Commissioner McNeil could not be here today, but we have a certificate for her as well. And we had heard that Mayor Doust was going to be here, but have not seen him yet. But we do have, hopefully, maybe he'll show up a little bit later. We have a certificate for him as well. And then also for Susie Lassen, she was here. She's out. There she is. Also for her as well as we have some certificates for some other alternates who had also served on the committee. So we'll be handing those out at the end of the meeting, probably be an appropriate time to do that. But I want to thank all the people who are going off of JPAC. Some have been here for many years, and appreciate all the effort and work that you've put in. I think they deserve a round of applause. Sorry, Shirley.
Thank you. I know we have a PAC meeting, and I'll just be real fast. But we have three key people leaving JPAC that have been voices at the table for the east part of the region. And of course, Commissioner McKeel is stepping down from office. She is term limited and won't be available to be on the commission again next year. And then Mayor Downs chose not to run again after 21 years in public office. So we really will be missing him. But I also want to say thank you to Susie Lissin, who I always consider as a voice for East Multnomah County, that important voice representing the freight and the industrial community, and always appreciate your comments. And thank you for participating in the East Multnomah County Transportation Committee all these years. So you'll definitely be missed, Susie, so the best to you.
Susie's been the JPAC alternate for, I believe, 13 years. Does that sound correct? Not possible. She started when she was in middle school. I'd like to acknowledge the time and effort you've spent. And in honor of her leaving, if you'd please stand up, I'd appreciate it. In honor of Susie's retiring, I would like to introduce a resolution to the group that JPAC formally take the position that JPAC loves freight. So I would make that motion that we take that formal position. It's moved and seconded. Any discussion around the table? All those in favor, say aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Okay, agenda item 5.2, JPAC legislative agenda. We all know that our transportation needs in... Did I miss something?
Yes.
Oh, I sure did. Excuse me. And do we have a quorum at present? Anybody count? We do. Okay. So actually, next thing on the agenda is the consent agenda, which is consideration of the minutes for November 10th. Does anybody have any corrections or additions to the minutes? If not, I'd entertain a motion for approval.
Second.
I heard a motion. I heard a second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Yes. 5.1. Excuse me. How did I skip that? Anyway, the first item on our active agenda is for informational and discussion item is JPAC Finance Subcommittee recap. And even though it says me on there, I'm actually going to have Alyssa give a recap of the latest Finance Subcommittee meeting.
Good morning. Many of you were at the JPAC Finance Subcommittee, whenever that was. But the idea, October 24th. But what we've been wanting to do is report back to JPAC as a whole group around the Finance Subcommittee activities. The first meeting we had was to dive in deeper on the ODOT bottleneck projects that were prioritized through the flexible funds to get a better sense of what actually we were investing in. We've now done the same thing with the transit projects, and in January we anticipate a third meeting to do it on the active transportation project development. So I'm going to give you a quick summary of what we talked about around the sort of project development and funding for our transit investments that we've prioritized through the region. I don't see the PowerPoint. I don't know how to talk without a PowerPoint. I don't think anybody does anymore. And you actually have in front of you the full handout that was handed to the committee, so you can look at it, but I will give you a summary version of it. What will I do without a PowerPoint? As you know, there are two capital projects that we're working on, the Southwest Corridor and Powell Division, or actually Division BRT. There it goes. Thank you. So I'm going to quickly summarize each of the project's status and talk a little bit about their finance. This is the long version.
You at least get the first one.
As you know, we've prioritized high-capacity transit corridors, Division, Powell, and Southwest Corridor, the green ones. Southwest Corridor connects major destinations around the region and to the light rail system. It's not just building a light rail to Tualatin. It's all of these destinations that you can now access through the MAX system. Anyway, we're switching PowerPoints midstream. Last meeting of the year. It's a little test for me and you.
Do another PowerPoint.
Let's just put up growth management and see if anyone's paying attention.
That's good, too.
There we go.
It takes a village. Here we are. Three topics. I told you about them. There will be the three transit conversations. Again, Southwest Corridor connects more than just the Southwest Corridor. It builds a needed extension of the MAX line that connects to the whole system. Just want to talk about the milestones. We've made a major turning point and have actually entered the federal environmental process as of a couple weeks ago. So we are moving forward on an aggressive schedule to complete the environmental review and have a locally preferred alternative in about a year and a half, and move forward from there. I want to summarize a little bit of where we are with the financing strategy, which is the project, it looks to be in the neighborhood of about $2 to $2.4 billion for the total project cost. As often is the case, we are looking for 50% financing from the federal government, which means we need to find the other 50%. We have made some good steps with our regional flexible funds commitment. There are some strategies that we're looking at for other finance approaches, which is partly why we have the finance subcommittee. You'll hear more about it as we talk about our legislative agenda as well. You've also heard about the Division Transit Project, started as Powell Division. I think we still know that Powell has a huge transit need and is recommended for further work, but we are moving forward with this bus rapid transit, the first in the region, on Division Street. There are sort of two characters of the project that you've heard of. There's the outer division piece, in which there really are some opportunities to improve how buses function at how many people they can serve. Also to improve the street and streetscape characteristics out in outer division where it's desperately needed, as we've heard from John Biltso. And then inner division is a very different urban character, and we'll have some context-sensitive solutions that will allow far more people to ride the bus on inner division and move the buses far quicker through some congestion. Again, we are about to enter the formal federal environmental process for this project, which is also a very exciting milestone after all of the work and planning. We are about to move forward with a locally preferred alternative, and this project, is on a also aggressive timeline to get completed. We need less money for this project, but we still need a financing strategy. We are looking for a small starts grant from the Federal Transit Administration. We have made a flexible funds commitment, and we need to think about some other ways to close the gap. Enhanced transit is a conversation you have heard a little about and will start hearing more about. The idea is that we have yet another need in our transit system in addition to high-capacity transit, bus rapid transit, and bus service. There are buses that could maximize the existing road system more. And we've heard proposals from really from City of Portland primarily and TriMet around creating a new transit service level. And you can sort of see this enhanced transit that goes along the continuum from basic bus service, express service, this enhanced transit model, all the way to high-capacity transit. So the region really hasn't evaluated this and looked into it, but we've heard the need through other transit work that we're doing. So we're talking about how to move that forward and what the strategy for that is as part of this overall piece. And I know that perhaps Commissioner Novick might want to say more. Basically, where we left this conversation with JPACT is a potential opportunity to take some of the regional flexible funds that had been dedicated to Southwest Corridor and pull them off to do a little bit of project development around this enhanced transit work so that we can have a regional context for that as well. And that is really the short version of what you have in your handout. I'm happy to answer questions or talk further.
Commissioner Savage?
Mine is just a comment. I found that the last two JPAC subcommittee presentations were great. I think they were informative, and I appreciate that. And at some point, I think the members of the committee need to hear that. But having attended each and every one of the subcommittee meetings, I think it's and as I stated from the very first one, it would be nice to understand really what our charge is and what our role is. I certainly appreciated and it was an honor to have a number of our legislators around the table, and I was just kind of wondering what our charge really is, and it seems more presentation based than it does anything. And here we are with the legislative session coming, and the really subcommittee members really haven't had a chance to really talk about or establish whether the guiding principles for the first meeting that we talked about or anything else. So I'm looking forward to having that dialogue. And again, I know we have one more presentation left. It was on what, active transportation? Right. So, and I think that's important to have. But the same token, is it'd be nice to actually work as a subcommittee and maybe understand what that role is.
I could clarify that briefly right now. That the primary charge and goal of that would be to, once we've looked at the different modes, which is kind of where we are right now, gathering information, which is why there's a lot of presentations, with the idea that eventually we would have discussion that would come to the subcommittee making a recommendation to the JPAC committee on whether the region should go to the voters for a regional funding source for these and other projects that we would identify actually as part of the regional transportation plan update as well, which would then, and then also a recommendation on whether to and when to go to the voters for that regional package. So that's the main goal. Also, it's kind of to gather our thoughts for the upcoming legislative session. So as we look at next month, when we do look at active transportation, we will then have looked at the three different modes, and it would be up to the subcommittee at that point that to be able to determine what kind of a recommendation they would like to make to the larger committee with regards to our position on things for the upcoming legislative session as well, but making specific asks or providing input into the transportation committees as they determine what may or may not be in a transportation package at the state level.
I appreciate the information and the clarification.
Commissioner Novick.
Yes, I just wanted to put in a plug for the importance of the enhanced transit concept. And by the way, just to give some examples of what enhanced transit can mean in practice, it could include, depending on the context, such things as more frequent service, longer articulated buses, next generation transit signal priority, intersection treatments like Q jumps, and the like. The challenge of bus transit, or existing bus transit, being slowed by vehicle congestion is shared throughout our region. The transit improvements contemplated in the proposal for enhanced transit can benefit areas throughout the region and provides an opportunity for us to implement solutions more quickly for all our residents. I want to thank Neil and staff at TriMet and Metro for taking our request to allocate $5 million from the $80 million in regional flexible funds, project readiness funds, to develop a pipeline of enhanced transit projects to help support the diversity of the Portland region's transit needs as we grow. And we would like to ask, put on the table for a future formal discussion, that within this $5 million, Metro staff consider putting $1.5 million towards short-term transit corridor analysis and concept design.
Thank you. Members of the committee, is there any objection to taking this proposal from Commissioner Novick and giving it to our staff and having them analyze what kind of impact that would have on our decision as we go forward for regional flexible funds, and then it could be considered perhaps as a resolution at a future meeting? Mayor Knapp.
Thank you. Clearly, in my mind, this enhanced transit concept is an appropriate part of transit discussion, and we need to be thinking about how to fold it into the overall strategy. The piece I've not seen any discussion on yet is what do we give up if we pull $5 million and put it toward this now. So that analysis you refer to, I think, is important, but we need to also be understanding what it is we would be delaying or deferring or foregoing at this point. And so I would hope that that can be a clear part of the analysis as well.
I think that would be the primary purpose of it, would be to determine exactly that. And particularly, you know, now we're looking at the future of CMAQ funding, which is, a little over a third, I think, of all of our regional flexible funds, is now kind of on the table again. So we need to have a, you know, be able to determine what kind of impacts this is going to have or would have. Thank you. Mr. McFarland.
So, Chair Dirksen and members of JPAC, just to note that we've also appreciated working with our many other staff members at PBOT and the Commissioner, and do support this request, so would really appreciate the report back from staff on the issues that Mayor Knapp noted, but also I think generally this is a really important element. You begin to think about, frankly, the 60% of our riders who actually use the bus every day. If you begin to look at really the majority of those, they're on specific corridors, now frequent service corridors. Over half of those riders are on frequent service corridors. And the question is, as densities increases and as development occurs, how are we going to keep up with that? So I think there's some really important questions for us to answer within this analysis. And again, we're not building any new arterials in many of these areas, so we need to figure out how to really take maximum use of the space, road space that we have. And I think this is an appropriate way to do that from the transit perspective. So thank you for that.
Commissioner Savitz.
Yeah, just briefly, I would like to just acknowledge, just put on the table, recognize that there's a lot of people that aren't served because there is no service to them, period. I think that's part of the analysis that ought to be done.
It is. Yeah, I agree. Mayor Doyle.
Just to echo that, this will be a system-wide look at potentially changing how we function, right? Because, you know, down in our little humble part of the world, we're adding 10,000 people inside of a mile and a half between Tigard and Beaverton. So that area is really underserved, and I hope that will be part of the study.
Hearing no objective, then that would be our charge to staff, would be to take the commissioner's proposal and review it and anticipate what its impact would be on our future funding. Okay, thank you. Okay, now we get to agenda item 5.2, the JPAC legislative agenda. This was why, for me, was the primary reason for the importance of rescheduling this meeting before the end of the year, would be for this group to be able to hear and respond to the proposal for what JPAC's legislative agenda should be going forward. Our needs are considerable in the region, much more so perhaps than the rest of the state. It's important that we work together to advance a package that's large enough to actually address our needs. Earlier this year, our region decided to invest in project development through the Regional Flexible Funds Policy Framework, including transit investments, the three bottleneck projects, and also active transportation. So we should use this policy as a jumping-off point and work toward a shared regional strategy to present to Salem. And this means having some discipline and focus on what we support. You can't focus on everything, because then you're not focusing at all. So I would go so far as to advocate for finding a JPAC lobby day where we would have representatives from JPAC go to Salem and be able to meet with representatives on the Transportation Commission or Committee and others to advocate for our proposed package and for our legislative agenda. And so I'm going to be looking at a date when and we would be able to do that during the legislative session. If the region is going to make large investments in projects of what are statewide significance, such as the bottlenecks to the freight network and others, we need to make that case to our public and to the state, and we need to see that the state is invested in these projects as well. So we need a big enough package to make that possible. Today, we'd like to begin the conversation about confirming what our regional priorities really are in advance of the upcoming legislative session. We'll have two more meetings to review and approve JPAC's legislative agenda, but now's the time to get everything on the table. So I would introduce Noah, who is going to give us an overview of basically what we've seen and heard at this table and also at our regional transportation forums that we've had, and this is a proposal kind of to outline what a legislative package could be.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm going to try and make up for some lost time. I know a lot of people are here for the RFFA project discussion as well. I got a little bottle of my political hero's homebrew here to inspire me to. I'll pop it open when I'm done.
Just to clarify, it wasn't a homebrew, it was an Nikasi product.
Throw an inspiration. And I also wanted to acknowledge that I'm here in place of Randy Tucker, who's not well, getting some treatments, will be better soon. But I've noticed that Randy loves getting work emails while he's out. And so if anybody has questions or wants to contact him directly. The goal here, I just want to go over sort of the general contours of what our legislative agenda might be for the region. There are discussions going on among our staff and lobbyists to get initial feedback from you. So I think it's going to be pretty high level today. But what we'd like to do is bring back at the next JPAC meeting in January a more formal written version of this agenda for adoption in February to take into the session. So we want to see if we're on the right track today, basically. There isn't, I would say, a real center to the conversation about about a statewide transportation package. There's been a lot of inputs to it. It's going to be a busy, busy session with revenue questions all over the place, so it's going to be hard to get the focus on this. I think we all recognize that. That said, the governor led a statewide conversation and issued a vision panel 7 months ago that's an input to this conversation. The OTF issued its point of view, which was sort of a common denominator, general report on what might be possible in this session. There's an organization that's been formed called Go Oregon, which you can go check out online, to advocate for a significant package. And now the focus is really on the Joint Interim Committee on Transportation, Preservation, and Modernization in the legislature. So that's really where the focus is right now. But there are a lot of inputs. ODOT itself presented some scenarios last week, I think, on investment priorities. So we want to just plug in from a regional perspective on what those should be from our perspective. I think it's also important to just recognize, coming out of the OTF discussion, that groups such as the AAA and truckers have kind of laid down a marker that $300 million is the appropriate level, joining measured per capita from what Washington did last year. And I think we want to push back against that from a regional level, and I'll explain why through this presentation. I just want to stress also that our priorities are built on the policies and strategies that you've adopted here at JPACT. Of course, our RTP, the Climate Smart Strategy that was adopted regionally, and the flexible funds policy decision that you all worked so hard on. So we, I think, as Chair Dirksen said, that we want to advance that through this session. Coming out of the Governor's Vision Panel, I think it's important to note that that work established these statewide priorities, many of which are focused on the metro region, because of its importance to the state economy, state commerce, and transportation in general. So it's focused on maintenance over everything as a top priority, and I think ODOT does a tremendous job of maintaining that priority. And then they look specifically at congestion in the metro area as a statewide issue, support for transit, and seismic as the third priority. And I think it's important to note that this lines up with the policy work that you've done. Through the RTP, the O&M piece is always included in that. The congestion relief is what we were addressing in the RFFA priorities, both on the highway and transit and active transportation side. How do we address that with multimodal solutions? The importance of transit operations is really first and foremost in a climate smart strategy that we adopted. The seismic thing is a challenge a little bit in that I think we all recognize it as a priority. No question about it. I know that the county, Multnomah County, is doing some serious looks at this right now, but we don't have an adopted policy at this table around the seismic, so I just wanted to acknowledge that. I wanted to get into what I think, in talking with our staff and lobbyists, are the top priorities that jump out at us to take down to the legislature. So I want to go through this pretty quickly, but looking at the road column there, I think you can break it up into some enhance and fix it scenarios. So we've identified, and this is an important note, I think, and there's more notes on this in the presentation that we'll pass around, also for the benefit of those who aren't here. But when you look at the bottleneck projects that we've been working on through the RFFA, and they, you know, they come out to just under $1 billion, and we think it's probably a good proposal to put on the table that that should be, in principle, at least half and half, and that maybe the state, you know, has a requirement to come in and show its commitment early to the level of about $500 million. So that's something that we could discuss, but that's, we're putting that on the table. And we're very supportive of some of those projects, such as the Abernathy Bridge 205. We've put forward as a state and as a region for a fast lane grant. I hope everybody's very supportive of that, but that's certainly not a gimme. So we have to build our strategy around not getting federal money, not getting outside money, and that would mean raising it in Salem and here in the region. In order to get $500 million, you have to be able to bond $45 million out of this package. That's an important detail, and we'll come back to that in a couple of minutes, but in addition to that, I think the top priorities that we would be looking at, the bottlenecks, a request for Southwest Corridor out of lottery bonds, and there's been a lot of focus on active transportation in the budget. The Governor's Vision Panel put forth $26 million as a goal. I think some advocates have bumped that up to $28 million. So it's not a specific proposal for source, but more of a priority. That's statewide money. And then in addition to that, on the sort of operations side, we have the input to the 50-30-20 formula, ODOT cities, counties. That just depends on the size of the package, but we would obviously support that. And then transit operations, as I mentioned, is really key for us. And the previous session, we talked about $80 million. I think some advocates have put the number of $110 million. The question, of course, is where does that come from? But at this meeting, I think we're saying, do we support that as a priority in general? And then in addition to that, you have sort of these ongoing programmatic categories that I think we want to bring up as potential priorities. One is, Chair Dirksen mentioned, is the CMAQ backfill that I think we'd like to aim for so that we can keep going on what we're already doing with our current levels. We say that would be about $6 million. That's for both us and the Rogue Valley to keep that program whole and add Salem and Eugene. And then some legislators have put in a suggestion for an additional $2 million for diesel programs and other clean air things. So that's a flexible number. We can come back to it. Supporting the Connect Oregon program, which has been very important for multimodal projects that are not included in the base package, both freight and active transportation. And then the question of the statewide of issues of jurisdictional transfer, orphan highways, if you will. There was a proposal in the last session that we add a cent to create a program to do that. The alternative is to go about that in an earmark project-by-project kind of way. So the question to you is, should we take a stab at a more broad statewide program that addresses this systematically, or is it more of an earmark one-off? So those are the priorities that we've identified. And I just want to go through very quickly, because I know we're pretty much out of time, but there's been a lot of talk about how large this package needs to be, and I just wanted to take you through the logic of why. Why $300 million is not enough, why we need to be advocating for more, and why, if we want to accomplish the things that you laid out in the RFFA policy decision, we need to have the funds to be able to do it. So again, I mentioned that we'll need to have $45 million annually in this package to address the bottleneck projects on the three freeway projects that the highway projects that we identified. That's before you add in other statewide earmarks. So how, you know, in what scenarios could you do that? In the past, that's happened either through earmarking out of the statewide ODOT share, or that was in the last JTA package that went through, or off the top of the entire amount of the package. So here's what happens if you do that. If you take it out of the ODOT share just to bond so this would be if we had a $300 million package, and you see there the ODOT side of $150 million, just to bond for our projects would take $45 million out of that, even before you set aside other statewide earmarks. Traditionally, I think, Ryan, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but they bonded around 33% of the ODOT side or something like that. So you've eaten up pretty much everything that we've historically bonded out of the ODOT share, leaving not a lot left for that important statewide operations and maintenance. That's not a terrific scenario in Region 1 or anywhere else for that matter. The alternative is you take it off the top, and now we're starting to talk about covering into cities and counties money more deeply. And I know the lists of things that have to get done in Clackamas County is, you know, in the many millions of dollars. Start dividing this up and there's not a lot left. So we could go into this in more detail, but I think those are your two, who feels the pain is the question. And we think that's just not an acceptable scenario, that we need more in order to get those projects done. So we've articulated a few ways to show that, and I won't go into it too much, but we think fundamentally you have to grow the pie. So either you have to develop an overall package that is big enough to support a bonding mechanism for the project. So I've put here what I think is probably the right number, which is $500 million, and then you see it generates that statewide share, and you can get that $45 million out of there for the three bottleneck projects without taking too big of a chunk out of statewide other statewide priorities. Or you go at it the other way, if you don't want to think about it in those terms, and you say $300 million is a base package, and then what do we need to add on top of that? Bottlenecks, active transportation, jurisdictional transfer, other statewide earmarks, and probably I'm guessing that gets you near $500 million again, but it's sort of a different way of articulating to legislators what you're trying to accomplish, and that it can't carve it out of that base $300 million. It just doesn't do the job. So I'd love your input either today or over the next month as we prep for bringing you back a written resolution, which approach you think is more compelling or you'd like to stand by as we make this argument. So just to wrap up, the things that I think we'd like to get sign off from you to prepare for the next session are support for a larger size package, more around the $500 million range. These key elements of the package, including transit operations, bottlenecks, active transportation, support for committing lottery funds to connect Oregon and the Southwest Corridor Project, air quality funding for CMAQ and other air quality priorities around the region, and some approach to jurisdictional transfer or orphan highways, either a list of earmarked projects, if so, we'd like to hear what those are, or a programmatic proposal to do it statewide. This would be the core of what we would propose to prepare for you for the next session.
So we feel this is really supportive of the work we've already done at this table and the commitments that we'd like to be able to make going forward in the three modes of the bottlenecks and transit and also active transportation. And to put this in some context, there are, of course, other groups around the state who are also going through the same process we're doing. Maybe a week before at OMPOC, which is the Oregon MPO Consortium, their recommendation, we finalized fleshed out the legislative priorities for that group, and they're recommending to the legislature a 30 cent per gallon or equivalent increase, you know, which comes out to about something a little bit north of $500 million a year. Also, the Oregon Transportation Commission actually made a presentation to the Joint Transportation Committee that's been going around the state, and they outlined a package of what they see are the statewide needs, and it came out to $575 million a year. So all of this is very much in line and in context with the needs that have been identified by other groups as well. So it's a lot of money to ask for, but we'll be not a lone voice in the wilderness. We'll be part of a larger chorus of groups around the state who are very much in agreement as to the level of investment that's going to be needed in the future to go forward. Commissioner Savas.
Well, I appreciate the presentation, and I was aware of the OTC presentation and that also of the AAA, the OTA, Oregon Truckers Association, I believe.
The forum, the transportation forum?
Yeah. Well, the SOTF. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, so I understand the $300 million threshold of which they're advocating for, and I also, you know, in attendance of a number of forums or discussions about the size of the package, whether it's at Salem or whether it's here, whether it's at RTP discussion, and my comments, Mayor-elect Willer's comments here a couple weeks ago. And I think a lot of us, you know, Washington County included, I heard from the chair of Washington County as well, that, you know, maybe all of us in the room agree that there's, you know, it needs to be a bigger package than $300 million. And I realize that the concern is that they'll try to refer to the voters if it's over $300 million. And I think my comment here a couple weeks ago is that, well, that'll be a campaign. And it'll be a campaign for a regional bond. So I think what's important is, and I think the opportunity here is, never before, at least in my short time, have I seen statewide support for a lot of projects. And I think we're close to getting alignment. But my theme here is, I think we're better off trying to align ourselves and coming up with either the OTC's recommendation. So we need to get together as we don't have, go to the legislature with mixed messages, mixed numbers, mixed formulas. I think we need to get on the same page. I think this would be an awesome discussion for the subcommittee group. Don't know if we'll have time for that. Maybe we will in January. But I think getting in alignment and preparing ourselves for a campaign in a large scale would be best. And I would hate to rely upon us putting all of our effort in a regional bond and fall short on the state level, because we need indexing, we have a lot of maintenance issues, so that the fix-it needs to be funded, and it needs to be funded in a long-term way. And I think that the indexing and things of that nature are an important part of the state package.
Commissioner Novick.
A 30-cent increase in the gas tax would be, I'd imagine, a bit of a stretch, although it would be great. I would suggest that folks make a pitch to the legislature for, at a minimum, a 23-cent increase to the gas tax, because New Jersey just adopted that. And New Jersey, of course, is the only other state in the union with no self-serve gas, so I think we should always be aligned with New Jersey in anything we do to do with transportation.
I don't think that statement's ever been made ever in history before, that we want to be like New Jersey. Councillor.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask, there has been discussion that, you know, we hope we get the support of the state legislature for a statewide legislative package of some sort, like Noah just outlined. But in addition to that, that we might would consider a regional package. So you're, you didn't, of course, at this point yet address the regional. I know TriMet is considering going out to the voters. So do you want to add, elaborate on that a little bit? So it's the thought is that we would still, what we would do about a regional package that would supplement this.
Yeah, I alluded to it a little bit, and I think Commissioner Savas, I think, did a really good job of pointing out, I think we should write it into the document that we bring back, which is the kinds of numbers, and these are just working numbers that we've talked about, are, you know, that the region might go out and try to find $500 million, let's say, to share the burden, or the responsibility, maybe I should say, of building these projects with the state on state facilities. I think we, in the RFFA proposal, policy adoption, made a clear statement that we were committed to doing that. We committed funds for project development. That was a big step forward for JPAC. If we were to do that and take that to the public without the equivalent commitment from the state itself, from the legislature, that they were in, you know, half and half on that project or making some commitment, it would be a very hard argument to make with the public. So I think that that's what we're trying to capture, which is we want to set up a collaborative investment approach between the state, the legislature, and our region, and that we want to communicate that to our delegation, to our officials, that we're there and we need to see them come there to the table too. So we'll try and put that into the proposal we bring back to you in January. Is that sufficient?
Thank you. Yes, I just want to add one other thing. One thing that, and we'll be bringing this back to the region, the discussion that we had at in Seattle, and then, of course, when we went down to Sacramento to see what other states have done regarding transportation funding. But I was throw out there that I hope that we'll be very creative in what we consider for a regional package. I know, again, TriMet's considering something, but we may need more than that. Councillor Stacey has multiple ideas about how we might go about this. So I think we need to look at all and everything, you know, of opportunities, you know, looking at vehicle registration, looking at VMT, vehicle miles traveled, looking at congestion pricing. I think we need to figure out what is a package that really will be really help us build what we want to build. And so I just want to throw that out, that we don't overlook a variety of funding sources.
I think that's important that we do as well. I don't think any of us know any single funding source that is going to be able to take the burden by itself. Also, because of the different modes involved, we don't necessarily want the money all coming from the same place to go to different kinds of projects. So we need to address all those. Mayor Knapp.
Thank you. I agree with what I'm hearing around the table here, but I'm troubled by discussion of a significant transportation package, and we're talking about should it be $300 million or should it be $500 million. We're saying, what if it's referred to the voters? Well, you know, Washington State passed $15 billion, and then Seattle passed on top of that another, what, $42
billion. It was for transit.
I mean, they're not facing the same question of referrals to voters or building support across their regions or whatnot. I mean, we are thinking nickels and dimes. We're still trying to carve up the pie into little pieces. You know, can this piece go here? Can this piece go there? The reality is, unless we can continue to grow our economy and make the pie bigger, we're never going to have the kind of money to invest in our infrastructure that we need to do. So we need to be thinking bigger picture. And this is where I've been troubled by the transportation plan so far, because I don't see that happening in our discussions about the transportation plan. I think we need to be stepping back and looking at bigger concepts. To me, I mean, sure, we need the $500 million at least. I think if you start at $300 million and say, well, what can we add to that, you've already shot yourself in the foot, because you've conceded the frame of reference to the naysayers that say no more than $300 million. I think you've got to start at the higher end, and you have to make logical arguments about why this matters and about how we are not just this year but over the next 10 years and 20 years and 50 years going to be able to pay for the amenities that this region needs to have a healthy economy, to enable people to get to work, to have, you know, new sources of jobs, all those things that go together holistically. And it doesn't feel to me like we are there yet on this discussion. And so I am strongly in favor of having more discussion about a broad vision of how we get there than starting out from the little narrow perspective and say, well, we are going to have a problem getting past $300 million, therefore how are we going to divvy up the $300 million, you know, if we can get that. I think we have to come in much more visionary, much bolder, and build that vision and then say, okay, if this is the vision, where can we start to work toward that? And maybe the start is $500 million, or maybe we can get beyond that. But I just am deeply troubled by the direction we're going so far as a region. So I would like to see us kind of rethink the whole approach and see where we can go with that. In my perspective, you have broader dissatisfaction with freeway congestion now than any time that I can remember, and you have greater acknowledgement across the state that this is a joint issue throughout our economies and throughout our cities, all the way across the state. And therefore, this is, you know, in crisis is the opportunity. I mean, this is probably the best opportunity right now that we've had in the last 20 years to do something significant, to rebuild a vision about how to do this. And, gee, I wish we could be doing that. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Mr. Winsheimer.
Well, first, let me preface this by saying I think that the Governor's Vision Panel report and my commission's strategy and agenda that they set forward is perfect and cannot be improved on in any way. That said, what I really appreciate about this, and I think is going to be our strongest point and I encourage an emphasis on, is figuring out how do we frame the regional commitment in terms of a match, in terms of a request, and saying, we're not just here with our handout. We know these are really big projects. Rest of the state, even though you acknowledge that in the vision panel and other things, but we're actually showing up to the table as well, and we're going to commit some regional funds to that, and your funds are going to be leveraged in a really significant way. And I think that also, that argument also helps with the folks who have said referral. I think going to them and saying, again, we're not just saying we would like you to pay more, but we're going to actually give you a better return on that investment. Maybe another opportunity to figure out how to grow that package.
Thank you. Commissioner Novick.
I just wanted to say that I think that has an excellent point. Why is it that the Seattle region is able to pass a $15 billion package, which had support from not just King County, but two neighboring counties, whereas here, Tiger just lost a small increase in gas tax, and they got the increase in gas tax at Buckley Watkins County. We barely passed the gas tax in Portland. And I'm curious as to whether there's anybody has done sort of comparative public opinion research between Oregon and Washington, and is it that they're using better messages than us, or they're just richer than us, so people are more willing to pay more taxes? I think that'd be very interesting to explore what is what's possible.
One of the things we've heard when we've gone to symposiums on this subject and hearing what other areas are doing, like when we went to Sacramento and others, one of the things we've heard is when you're going forward, poll, poll, poll to find out what messages work best and people are more willing to support. So we would definitely need to do that. Mr. McFarland, yes, I would point out that we've got about 15 minutes left and we still want to talk about regional flexible funds.
Very, very quickly, because I know where we are on this, but I would just note, and this is really directly to that point, is that when we have seen and done some research on past polls that have been done, and candidly, transportation still does not rise to the number one issue that people in a free form survey rise. And so, frankly, we've done a good job, and the level of desperation is not as great as it is in some other regions. And so I think what we're going to have to do is really work with a lot of constituents. And that was the other point I made. And I think, Noah, this was an excellent presentation in terms of its clarity of the issues that we need to face as we sort of try to wrestle with the reality of the Oregon legislature in the next 6 months. But is that there are a lot of constituents who need to be talked to related to many of these funding issues, and that it's going to be up to us around this table to do that. You know, key amongst those is the business community, and given the sort of historical funding of transit operations with either a payroll tax or it's been talked about a employee tax, those are conversations that we really need to have with a series of constituents. And again, those have kind of come up organically out of the legislative conversations in the past, so that's reasonable that they're on that list. But just note there's no real consensus associated with that at this point.
That has been addressed by the OMPOC also, and actually I don't know that that's been distributed yet. We just recently got the kind of the summarized legislative agenda for the MPO consortium, and I think we should distribute that to JPAC members. I think Commissioner Savas makes a good point when we need to make sure that our position builds on the positions of others and that there's not conflict between them. Mayor Doyle.
Just to echo some of the thoughts here and be very brief. No, I think your $500 million is half right.
Commissioner?
I'll be brief. I'd love to respond to Commissioner Novick's question, and being one of the people who went up to Seattle, I would say that, you know, one of the things I gleaned is that how they work together, how the MPO works up there, seems to be more inclusive from a jurisdictional standpoint. They have quite a few more jurisdictions than we do as well, but they also had one heck of a campaign. But when every jurisdiction is on board and they do a campaign with the business community and others, I mean, it was impressive.
Any other comments? Yeah. Mr. Winsheimer.
So my last comment really quickly is I also encourage a reframing of the CMAQ question. This idea that it's a backfill is just it's just sort of not accurate in terms of the same amount of money is being allocated. It's just going to a larger group of places potentially. We still don't know based on what that group that you're working on, Councillor Dirksen, is going to come up with. I would frame it in terms of a climate smart air quality is important, and we got to think about investing in it. And not ask for six, but think about a larger number. And I would also talk about less in terms of CMAQ and just more, because it's not going to be CMAQ, it's going to be gas tax, or it's going to be something else. So, but framing it in terms of clean air is important, and we ought to figure out how to get there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Good point. Thank you.
If I could suggest to the chair, it sounds like we can take these comments, prepare a document for further discussion at the next meeting, to move towards an adopted policy position for the region, and I'd be happy to, with staff, to work on the next steps.
Well, the one thing I think I heard around the table, though, is when we need to talk about the need and the ask, and not building on top of a base package of $300 million, assuming that that's the top level we can assume, and how do we build on that? But rather, if you go back, so not don't use this message. But the other one is preferable, where we actually define what the needs are that add up to a figure that is needed, not what can we add on top of the assumption of a $300 million package. Let's not even define that as a level that we see anything above that as a problem. Why should we tell people what the problem is? Let's tell them what the need is and work backwards from there.
I think we ought to, I think we ought to actually look at the OTC recommendation and study that closely and see how we can align with that and what we can tweak. Because from what I understand, it was pretty comprehensive.
It was very comprehensive. I was very impressed by it. So I would agree that that is something that we could consider as a guide.
And just a quick note on that, we are trying to get two commissioners to come to the next ag meeting to talk about their vision. And so that's a forum for all of us who are on both panels to show up and have some additional conversation about it.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Sounds like you got a good alignment on where we should go. Item 5.3, Regional Flexible Fund, Step 2, Project Selection. We're entering the final phase of determining which projects are to receive funding through Regional Flexible Fund allocation for Step 2. And the submitted projects have been through a technical evaluation and also a public comment period. We've got input back from all the different jurisdictions, from the counties and from the City of Portland. And TPAC has provided a couple of different options on how we consider how we would divide those up based on technical evaluation or regional priorities, that kind of thing. Hopefully everybody's had an opportunity to look at the document that shows kind of where the cutoff point would be and where what kind of addition would be needed in order to make it whole. And I know Ted and Dan are here today to take you through the process in a little more detail, but to put it in a nutshell, I think what we've heard and what we will hear from them is a recommendation that rather than try to trim projects from the list to make it meet the need, that rather where the line is drawn now, maintain that and go back to the jurisdictions and see how and when or if any or all of those individual projects could be trimmed slightly so that it would bring the total back under what is actually available, so that none of the future further projects would need to be trimmed. Is that, in a nutshell, is that kind of correct?
That's a really good summary, yeah.
So if we don't get anywhere else today, that's kind of the summary that we'll be coming back probably in January with that recommendation. But to give us more information, we've got the Ted and Dan Show.
Okay, well, given the time constraints we have, I'm not really going to go through my whole presentation. I think Chair Dirksen gave you a pretty good summary of where we're at. Let's skip through here. We've worked with TPAC to talk about how to put a recommendation together. As you're aware from your staff materials, we have these four sources of information to help guide us. The technical scores, the public comment input we've received, the subregional prioritization, and then we also have our regional and federal policies that are shown in the RFFA policy document. So how we use those sources of input together to make a recommendation is really what we want to hear from you today. But this is just to really illustrate how we're trying to push the quantitative and the qualitative information together to make a more closely aligned recommendation that really honors both of or all the input that we've received through the process. We know that we're never going to get to a policy package that is absolutely perfect, but if we can use the public input to better inform the technical data and vice versa, we can get to a closer and better aligned decision. There are two examples included in your package today, in your materials today, that show how input could be used to put a package together. Example A is really a strict, technically evaluated project package. Example B brings in more of the public comment and the sub-regional prioritization as a factor in putting the package together. TPAC's recommendation was that we follow the example B model to put a package of projects together. I want to emphasize that the projects shown in the example today are strictly an example of how the information could be used and not necessarily the package itself. You'll note that in both of the examples, the projects included in those are more than we have available. So as Chair Jerkson was saying, we need to figure out how we can balance the projects that are desired to the amount of funding that we have available. There's four options for doing that. Those are covered in detail in your staff materials, so I'm not going to delve into that right now. And then there will be several strategies for how we use those techniques to get to a balanced package. Again, that's also covered, but it'll require some give and take from project applicants on perhaps cutting back certain elements of the project or figuring out ways that their project could be defederalized. So a lot of work will go into the recommendation between now and your next meeting. So here's the discussion for today. I will say also that we've put all of the projects in their descriptions in materials handed out today, and then they are also on our FTP site at the that you see there on the screen. So with that, we'd love to hear from you.
So in general, I think we're looking at, do I see general approval or that we use the go through the development of starting with example B, which includes the input from around the region, regional priorities. Also, I think we should take into consideration the input that we got today, and including what we heard from Mayor Gamba about his recommendation on projects for in Clackamas County. And so that's kind of a place to start on where we would go today. And I think Commissioner Savas was up. Were you up first? No, Mayor Knapp. Okay, let's go there.
Or ODOT?
Go ahead.
Thank you. The C4 committee and the C4 Metro Cities Subcommittee has had extensive discussion on this, and that group feels strongly that example B best reflects the needs of the cities in Clackamas County and appears to be appropriate across the region from our point of view. I think it's fairly unprecedented for the county to voluntarily say, and for the city of Milwaukee, and appreciate the mayor's willingness to take the lead and saying, we're willing to step back on the Monroe Street project because we don't think it's as important as another project in the Clackamas County area, which is the Westland Highway 43 project. And they're not exactly the same. The Highway 43 project is 400,000, 3,000,004 instead of 300. So there's a little more shortage if we do this. But Highway 43 is a very critical project, and I'm not sure that was captured in the technical analysis. There is no north-south corridor for alternative modes, let alone for vehicle modes. West of the Willamette River,
until you got all the way over to I-5. So if we're going to have any route that enables clear transportation for alternative modes all the way from Oregon City into the Portland and southeast area where there are jobs, and the downtown area where there are jobs, this has got to be it. And it is a horribly congested corridor. So the cities of the county, you know, feel strongly that this is an appropriate substitution to make, and we would request support for that. As far as finding money for the shortage on the overall project list, we have had around this table talk about defederalization, and I'm not clear if any of the above-the-line projects are federalized and could be defederalized, thereby saving money. I would like to hear an analysis of that from people that have that understanding of how that works. And I guess the other question I have, I guess, is for ODOT a little bit about Highway 43 being a state facility. Is there any ODOT money available to go toward this corridor project that is proposed? This idea of having a cycle track, I think, could be a first step, kind of regional example that might well prove out concept that could be used in future developments also. And I think it's worth investing in figuring out how to do this. If we have to come back to trimming money from people, yes, we will collaborate and try to make that happen. But I think the other questions need to be answered first. What about defederalization, and what about any possibility of a little bit more ODOT investment in a state highway facility? Thank you.
Well, you caught me off guard by saying more at the very end there, because yes, we are already putting money in through that enhanced program, and as we look to the next cycle, depending on what year we program this in, there may be another enhanced opportunity to do that. I don't know. And the cycle track piece, I think Commissioner Novick's going to beat you to it slightly, but because we're talking about a small portion of Outer Powell and getting that in. I encourage us to consider taking that public input very seriously and adjusting to it. I think having a public process and a public participation leads to better projects, and I appreciate you coordinating with the mayor and others in really recognizing what's best for this area, whether even though the technical ranking may be different, understanding what's best for your community is better there. I had one more thing. Oh, please, please, please do not set us up to have folks who think they have a project coming, but we're not giving them enough money and putting folks in a position of not having enough money to accomplish their goal. Can we please do some good scoping, make sure we got this right, and reduce scope if we need to, but make sure that we're not over-promising with the funding we have.
I'll be brief. I think Mayor Knapp did a good job outlining what C4 had done. And as a representative from Clackamas County, I want to also echo that Mayor Gamba shared with you that this project was split in two, one being in Clackamas County unincorporated and one being in the city. And I think option B reflects that. And so both Clackamas County and Milwaukee are going to forego that Monroe Street project for now, and I'm sure it will come back. And I do want to just put some emphasis on that. I think one of the things that was compelling to us, and maybe not clearly in the criteria that was used for in the option A process, was that this really is a regional corridor, and it really connects, you know, communities that are have good demographics and maybe have a little bit less demographics. So this is a corridor that moves people all the way through, and I think it is regional by its definition as a regional corridor, and I think arterials such as that ought to have a higher ranking than perhaps localized projects. So that, therefore, this project rose to the top.
Project-specific point on Portland's projects. Based on the initial technical scoring, we had four active transportation projects and one freight green economy project above the funding cutoff line. During the Metro lead public review, we heard really strong support from the Brentwood-Darlington neighborhood for a safety project that's right now just below the funding cutoff. We also providentially heard from folks in the Cully neighborhood that they proposed a rerouting of their project that would actually save money. Meanwhile, we also got City Council to approve general fund for our Outer Stark Halsey project. So we actually think that we could... within the same amount of money, in fact slightly less, fit the Brentwood-Darlington project in, and we think that the changes to the currently funded projects wouldn't change the overall technical score of those projects. We're up to work with Metro on that. We realize that we might need to make additional cuts beyond that, and we'll work to figure that out. But I just wanted to put on the table that we think that we could add a contract project with a lot of community support by scaling back the others without losing too much.
Commissioner, Councillor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, think option D is better than the strict application of the criteria. I think that's what you're saying. That the technical criteria are important, but they are subject to the human judgment in the process of articulating. Mayor Gannon said it best, you know, we should be funding this entire list. He gets us a little bit closer to that by bringing in two projects that were enormously popular. Heard from the City of Westland this morning. Metro Council heard from the City of Westland during the public hearing we held before the public comment period. We also heard from SCADs, or let's put numerous members of the Frederick Garland neighborhood. Those two projects both fell below the line. There were some technical issues that Frederick Garland faced. There was a technical issue, that is, lack of service to a disadvantaged community, that the Westland project. It would be great if we could achieve all our equity objectives and prioritize the Title I school neighborhoods away from the communities because we have such great needs and we can't meet them all. But what we're getting here is a mix of very good projects that go across the technical evaluation and have strong support for the community. I do want to speak to that. I have strong support for Brentwood Darlington as well as Westland. Those are both important presentations. Can we agree on the sweet spot? I heard Commissioner Novick say the city committed some significant areas down of the prices of projects that they proposed to be above the line. It's about $2 million, Steve, according to that letter from Mark Pierce, it's in the record. $2 million out of this $3 million, $3.8 million shortfall is a big step toward getting us there. And I hope all our local government colleagues can achieve something comparable.
Commissioner?
Yeah, just real quickly. I think staff and the communities did a fantastic job of putting this option B together. I know our staff and staff of Metro and the cities and jurisdictions here did a great job, so kudos on option B.
Right. Thank you. So to summarize, what I'm hearing is start with example B. Everybody sharpen their pencils a little bit, get creative about mixing and matching funding sources to defederalize projects if possible to increase the amount of money on the ground, and look at what other funding sources or changes that other jurisdictions have made in the meantime to try to get underneath the line for the amount of funding. Good direction forward? All right, and we'll hear back what they come up with next month. Anything else to come before us today? If not, I declare the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.
Came out pretty strong. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.